This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Governor Jim Justice said yesterday that West Virginia will be offering $800 million in general obligation state road bonds. As Dave Mistich reports, the sale of Series 2018A bonds prioritizes sales to West Virginia residents and begins on Monday, May 21st.
According to a news release, the bonds carry the state's credit ratings of AA2, AA- and AA by Moody's, S&P Global Ratings, and Fitch Ratings, respectively. The bonds will have maturities ranging from 1 to 25 years. Justice says the bonds will fund projects to rebuild the state's roads and bridges, as well as finance several new highway endeavors. West Virginia residents can purchase tax-exempt bonds by contacting one of 15 firms in the underwriting syndicate and selling group led by Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Bonds may only be offered through a preliminary official statement and be purchased through a registered broker. In October, voters approved a statewide referendum allowing the sale of $1.6 billion in bonds, known as the Roads to Prosperity Program. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich in Morgantown.
One of the ripple effects of the opioid epidemic is an increase in blood-borne diseases like hepatitis or HIV. A key method to prevent the spread of such diseases is proving to be controversial in West Virginia's capital city. The program was eventually suspended. Inside Appalachia's host, Jessica Lilly, recently spoke with the Charleston-Kanawha Health Department spokesperson to find out more.
If you've been paying attention, you know by now that Appalachia is in the middle of an opioid addiction crisis. You may have seen suffering addicts on the streets or in your own neighborhood. But John Law, spokesperson for the Kanawha Charleston Health Department, says what isn't as visible could be just as dangerous, bloodborne diseases like hepatitis and HIV.
What people don't see, and they may not see immediately, are the illnesses that using dirty needles cause in the population.
So Law's department set out to implement a needle exchange program in Charleston. Drug users could bring in a maximum of 30 dirty needles and exchange them for 30 new, clean ones. Programs like this are often part of what's referred to as a harm reduction program.
We often think of the people who use needles and the people who inject drugs as those unfortunate individuals we see huddled in doorways and sleeping on the street. And those people have a high drug usage, but it's also people who work in restaurants and secretaries and people who work in all facets of life who came through the harm reduction program and realized that they needed clean needles to stave off another health problem besides their addiction.
While needle exchange programs have been proven to lower the rates of bloodborne illnesses like HIV and hepatitis, they are also meant to help addicts find treatment and provide them with basic medical care. They can also generate data to help medical practitioners track the program's effectiveness. The original program started with just 5 people in December 2015. Eventually, 6,000 individuals visited 24,000 times. The health department distributed 650,000 needles and collected about 425,000 needles. That leaves about 225,000 needles unaccounted for. Law says these missing needles were never turned back in, so when dirty needles were found on the streets, it was a mystery just where it came from. First responders, like the city police chief, said needles were found in public places and accused drug users of leaving exposed needles in their clothing during pat-downs.
And there were excess needles there. Everybody realizes that. We are certainly not denying that. We went out on several times with city officials, and there were needles on the street, but there are needles on the street all over the country because we have an opioid crisis, not because we have a needle exchange, but because we have an opioid crisis. There were large numbers of needles found in abandoned residences where people have broken in and were staying. We also have a homeless crisis. We have a homeless problem that needs addressing. I think the needles were a symptom of that, but not the cause of that.
As a result of the outcry over the excess needles, the police chief issued a list of recommendations to address the program's flaws. But because some of the suggestions were difficult to implement, the city decided to suspend the program altogether in March. One of the problematic recommendations was to require participants to show photo ID, which Law says is impractical.
Many of the people that we deal with are homeless or don't have photo IDs. So we need to work around that. Another requirement was to require testing. You really can't, it's really borders on being unethical, or it is unethical to require testing of people. We strongly encourage it, but it can't be a quid pro quo.
The police chief also wanted the program to only distribute retractable needles, but law is concerned that distributing retractable needles isn't the best practice. Retractable needles are meant to be used one time. Once the needle is retracted, it can't be used again. That's how it's supposed to work, but law says this often isn't realistic for addicts who shoot up several times per day. Without ready access to multiple needles, they're likely to use the same one more than once.
The experts in the field will tell you that retractable needles are probably not a good idea because, one, it can cause tissue damage. Two, people won't retract the needle totally, and they're more inclined to share it, and that's what causes the spread of disease. And a retractable needle is only retractable if the user makes it so. It doesn't automatically retract. So those are issues that we are looking at to see if it's best practice.
Law says the health department has a responsibility to take best practices seriously, but it is continuing to evaluate the recommendations to see if the department can successfully implement them. Despite the public outcry and the program suspension, Law says he still considers it a success.
We measure success because the hepatitis rate in Kanawha County just declined. It was a slight decline, but it declined slightly. And we know anecdotally from our recovery coaches who were there and part of the harm reduction clinic that we had more than 100, probably closer to 150 people enter recovery. So that was very gratifying.
Law says the program was a national model that was used other places like Huntington, West Virginia.
I think if we failed, we were probably not quick enough to respond to concerns that were expressed. Because it was a nationally reviewed and nationally modeled program, we were following best practices. That being said, and it's what we're doing now, you need to listen very closely to the people in your community, and you have to do what is right for your community at the time. Each community is different, and each program is going to have to be tweaked a little bit on site.
Law says the exchange program is important to public health, and the department will continue to look into implementing the Charleston Police Chief's recommendations. Meanwhile, in May, the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources Bureau for Public Health confirmed 72 cases of hepatitis A in Cabell, Kanawha, Lincoln, Putnam, Wayne, and Wyoming counties. Of those cases, 64 have occurred in Kanawha and Putnam counties. Additionally, there are possible cases still under investigation but not yet confirmed by the state laboratory.
There is certainly a sense of urgency knowing the potential out there with HIV and hepatitis C, but there is the same sense of urgency to be responsive to the community and really do what the community needs and wants.
Shortly after our interview with Law, the West Virginia DHHR released results of an investigation into the program. The DHHR listed 6 items in the report that were problematic, including missed opportunities for linking users with treatment, messy data entry, and a lack of an oversight committee. They also concluded that the Charleston-Kanawha Health Department's Harm Reduction Syringe Services Program certification be suspended until some of their recommendations can be implemented. The Charleston police chief did not return our request for comment. Current Mayor Danny Jones would not grant us an interview, but he's spoken out frequently against the program.
That was Inside Appalachia host Jessica Lilly reporting. You can hear more about the needle exchange program across the region in the next episode of Inside Appalachia. That's right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting, Sunday mornings at 7 and Sunday evenings at 6. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:54. Cloudy skies today. Rain and thunderstorms. Heavy rain possible in the east with highs in the 70s. Chance of rain and thunderstorms tonight with lows in the 60s. Scattered rain and thunderstorms tomorrow with highs in the 70s and 80s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by West Virginia Paving, utilizing over 650 West Virginians that know our roads and ensure they are maintained with quality and safety. West Virginia Paving, a West Virginia company serving our communities. Visit wvpaving.com to learn more. And by the Clay Center in Charleston, featuring 30 Americans, an art exhibition exploring the influence of artistic legacy and community across generations. Opens May 11th. More at theclaycenter.org. Our song of the week comes from acclaimed Nashville singer and songwriter Kim Ritchie, along with her band and San Francisco's Chuck Prophet, who was a guest on this episode and also appears on Ritchie's new album, Edgeland. Here's their duet, Whistle on Occasion, live on Mountain Stage.
Time when I'm not home. If it's not the thunder, it's the lightning. Count my blessings when I find them. Got my hands in my pocket, my feet on the ground. I might whistle on occasion when there's no one else around. I might whistle on occasion. Royal flush still beats a pair. I grabbed the moment, held it there. This town looks smaller from a distance. When I'm gonna miss it. Got my hands in my pocket, my feet on the ground. I might whistle on occasion when there's no one else around. I might whistle on occasion. Ooh. Everybody needs somebody.
Yes, they do.
Everybody need somebody like I need you, like I need you. Got my hands in my pocket, my feet on the ground. I might whistle on occasion when there's no one else around. I might whistle on occasion.
That was Kim Ritchie with help from Chuck Prophet performing Whistle on Occasion live on Mountain Stage. For this and more, tune in Friday and Saturday night at 8 right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Molly Bourne, Jessica Lilly, Carol Lofton, Liz McCormick, Dave Mistich, Brittany Patterson, and Roxy Todd. Our news director is Jesse Wright. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.